I'm Aaron Schoenfeld, and you're listening to The Sound of the Loons.
Good morning, afternoon, or evening, depending on when this finds you. Welcome to the Sound of the Loons podcast. I'm Steve McPherson, and I'm joined per usual by my friend Callum Williams, and we are joined via the magic of Zoom by Ford Aaron Schoenfeld from sunny, I presume it's sunny, Orlando, Florida. Yeah. Aaron, I'm obviously mostly interested in talking to you, but I have to begin with the wild fact that Cal announced on Facebook yesterday that he thought the hook from Ariana Grande's Thank You Next was bacon eggs. Cal, would you care to comment on this?
If you listen to the song, I swear to you, it sounds like she's saying bacon eggs. I always thought it was very bizarre that she was so grateful for her eggs.
We'll have to go in after this and take a listen. I can be the judge of this after I take a good listen.
Yes, I think we need an outside party, because I listened to it this morning. I put on the headphones right away and listen to it. I was like, I can't hear bacon eggs. Although I appreciate a great, ode to breakfast, because I love breakfast, but I couldn't really hear it. Aaron, I think you went on mute. We're learning technology here.
My bad.
It's all good. Aaron, are there any lyrics that you have always misheard in songs?
I mean, I'm sure there is. Give me a second.
The classic that I know is the Jimi Hendrix song Purple Haze. People think it's "Excuse Me While I Kiss This Guy."
I would say that's it. I would say "Excuse Me While I Kiss This Guy" too. That's what I've heard.
There was also, my brother was notorious growing up for mishearing lyrics, and he thought that the U2 song, Cal, this one's for you, the U2 song "I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For" was "I Still Haven't Found My Book Report." So he would sing along very heartily in the car in that way, which is hilarious.
I don't know. I'll be honest. I have a problem. When I hear these songs, I have to literally like read the lyrics. I swear I mix up words and it's a nightmare for me.
Sure. So you're not great. When you go out for karaoke.
Oh, you're just no. All the wrong words. Yeah, of course. The wrong words every time.
So let's start, Aaron. Let's just talk about a little bit about the trip down to Orlando. Like, how was the whole, I mean, after you've been sort of isolated, you came back to training and stuff like that, but actually going on a plane, and then what's the setup like down there in Orlando?
Yeah. So, obviously I'm sure everyone knows we've been training, full team training a couple weeks, regularly tested. I think it was every other day we were getting, nasal tested, and once a week we were doing blood draws. So we felt pretty safe coming down. Took a private plane down, and it was, real safe. We pulled up on the tarmac, and we just loaded into a plane. So that, in that sense, it was great. We all felt safe in that way. But once we got here, obviously there's been a lot of cases coming out of players down here. And I don't know, we can't really attest where it's coming from. But, it's a good setup. Obviously, we all have our own rooms. Everyone brought their own kind of gaming supply. So a lot of us have just been gaming. It's kind of like a frat house that you don't see each other. You're right across the hall yelling at the person to, get online. Or, you're yelling through the wall to Ethan to get online to play with me. But it's really unusual circumstances. It's just, essentially the new normal. You're walking around everywhere with a mask on. Everyone around the hotel has a mask on. The food situation is pretty funny, because usually we do these group trips and it's just an open buffet. You go put what you want. Now, obviously social distancing, you're 6 feet apart. It's one at a time, so this can be a little daunting, but it's not bad. And so far it's been very manageable.
Yeah. How was that nasal swab test? I've heard some stories about it tickling people's brains.
So I'm about 20 nasal swab tests in, and it depends on your tester. We've come to this conclusion. There's some testers, I don't know, are more gentle and it's more of a tickle, and there's some testers that are just jamming through your nose, and it almost feels like you're gonna bleed. But it's all, it all depends who's testing you. I mean, it can be so easy, or it can be so hard.
Yeah.
Is there a feeling, Aaron, of, is there a feeling of apprehension, maybe? Is there a feeling of nerves at the moment? Because we see every day more and more positive tests are coming out inside the area that you're in.
Yeah, if you would have asked me 12 hours ago, I'd probably have a different response. But obviously, you know, with more coming out, even as we're speaking, yeah, there's more nerves coming through. You know, we just kind of, I guess the whole, we don't really understand where it's coming from. You know, I guess the theories that we're hearing is that it's coming from before they come on the trip, or the teams are getting contracted with the virus before, maybe a player, maybe a few, and then spreading it throughout the team since we're all pretty confined. But, yeah, I mean, obviously, if you asked me 12, 16 hours ago, I would have said, no, there's no worries, you know. But obviously, you know, we've seen all the reports coming out through ESPN and then more numbers of cases in certain organizations. Yeah, it's alarming.
So, in terms of that, like the sort of moving ahead with the concern and everything like that, are there adaptations being made sort of on the way as far as training, or is it just sort of like we got to trust the bubble and the way that we're training and the process we have in place?
Yeah. I mean, as of right now, we're trusting the process, trusting that, you know, our players are isolating themselves from other teams. And, you know, we've been here 4 days and we've had zero positive tests. So as I'm currently talking to you now, we're feeling comfortable that in our group, we don't have it. Down here. And so, you know, it's all up to the next guy, or to be as safe as possible, you know, to minimize all your risk. And it's not only for that individual, it's for the group, you know, to not put the group in danger.
Right.
So I think, you know, most everyone is trying to do their best to keep everyone safe, trying to, you know, stay sane throughout the situation. You know, we knew what we're getting into. We knew it's not an ideal situation, but we knew we needed to help do it for the league, to do it for ourselves, our careers and everything. And I think everyone's trying to make an unpleasant situation the most pleasant we can.
Sure. Yeah. So you're talking about staying sane. That I saw you, the photo of you with the monitor getting on the plane. Like, it's clearly you're serious about getting your gaming in.
Yeah.
I know you're a game guy. Like, who? I mean, you said you're playing with Ethan and stuff like that. Like, who else? Yeah. Are the big gamers on the team?
We got Tyler Miller into gaming. Boxy's into gaming. I put Robin Lott as well, but also. Raheem Edwards, Mason Toy, all these guys, you know, we got a deep roster. And so if you ain't in that top four, you're kind of on that cusp of the Warzone squad. So
so it's all Call of Duty? Is that what it is? That the deal?
Yeah, right now we've all kind of shifted to Call of Duty. I mean, you know, a year ago I would have told you I never would touch Call of Duty. I was so obsessed with Fortnite. But once that little series has died for me. So I'm full train on Warzone.
Yeah, Fortnite was, I mean, I remember talking to Brent, I think, about Fortnite, and this is a couple of years ago, and he sort of had a squad with some of the other players who played. But
yeah
the Call of Duty thing has gotten big. I feel like I'm too old at this point, because it's just like my Twitch skills are
gone. Oh, I feel it. I can see it. I mean, I'm 30. I'm not saying I'm old or anything, but I can see it. You know, I remember younger, it felt so easy, and now I literally have to concentrate so hard to, like, just see moving objects in a distance. And I'm telling you, they took a look. I read an article one day, like, your peak gaming age, I think, is 13 to 19, or your peak years of gaming. So that's enough.
Yeah, no, I'm way past that point.
I don't remember the last time I played a proper video game, to be honest. So I'm intrigued to see how that turns out.
Stay away, I'm telling you. There's too many 12-year-olds beating me down every day, talking bad to me. It ain't good.
From a game that you play for pleasure to a game you play for a living, how has training been since you've gotten down to Orlando?
Training's been great. We've had, I think we're four. I mean, I'm kind of lost in the bubble, but I think we're 4 days in. I don't know. Something like this. Every session's been good. Trying to adapt to the heat. The first session we did in the evening, so it was a little cooler, but the last 3 days we've been at the 10 a.m. slot. right before it gets to that peak temperature. But, you know, it's a grind. I mean, you're 20, 25 minutes into training and you have water coming out of your shoes from sweat. You know, you're just an adaptation. I mean, we're all going through it. We're all learning to fight through the heat, all learning to prepare ourselves physically before, you know, with hydration and whatever. You know, most of us have been doing this for a while, so I understand what it takes to get through these rough sessions, but it's been good. I mean, we've, you know, done a good amount of fitness, a good amount of gym, and, you know, we feel prepared.
Do you feel like that adaptation process, is that going to favor teams like Orlando or Inter Miami who are sort of already somewhat accustomed to it?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you could say that. It's literally a mental thing, you know. I mean, once your body kind of adapts to suffering, I feel like at that point it's mental. I mean, I would say if you came for one day and tried to play a game and, you know, those crazy temperatures, I would say they'd have an advantage. But, you know, if we're down here training for two weeks before, you know, I feel like we're all at the same playing field.
Yeah, that's fair. I remember when Minnesota United, the first season, played the home opener, and it was in that raging snowstorm, and people are like, well, this is a home field advantage. And I was like, listen, none of the guys on this team have been here for more than like a month, first of all.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, I think that the idea of, you know, there's a certain adjustment that helps, but that doesn't necessarily make a huge difference, you know, game or anything like that.
So. I mean, I remember when I was young in the league, we'd go play away in Houston when I was in Columbus in the summers, and you would be like, wow, these guys can run forever. You know, they were just a little more accustomed to the heat and managing their bodies throughout the game. But I feel like if we're all down here training for, you know, a good amount of time before, it's all level playing field.
Yeah. So do you feel like it's possible to assess, you know, the season obviously has been so, so bizarre, and there's that process that any team goes through where there's sort of training camp, you know, preseason, early games as they get adjusted. And then this got interrupted and you sort of went through another off season and then another training camp. Is it possible to assess where the team is right now as a team sort of as a whole versus where you were sort of when play was suspended?
I mean, it's hard to say. It's a hard question. I'll say this. I feel like our group, you know, we have a ton of chemistry. You know, it's an organization that I feel there's really not any cliques in the locker room. Everyone gets along. You know, you can see it's a guys who are willing to play for each other. There's no selfish personality. So I'll say that. That'll add to, you know, all the craziness. That'll help us through this. But you know, obviously before we were probably in better form. If you want to say that, we'd been together longer, you know, longer training camps and everything. But I feel like we're still fine. The group's still clicking. And, you know, I feel like everyone in the league is just trying to get back as much fitness as they can.
Aaron, because of the amount of time players have had off, there's obviously going to be a physical disadvantage for the majority of players, you would assume.
Yeah.
With that in mind, do you expect the football to be a little more direct, perhaps a little more reserved?
I mean, in theory, I would say that teams will probably sit back, conserve a bit of energy. You know, this is just logically thinking. I don't know anything, but just logically thinking, teams will probably want to sit back, conserve energy in the heat, and probably play for the counterattack. You know, I would imagine probably the most organized team in these games are going to win based off the conditions, based off lack of full training, lack of full fitness, you can say. But, you know, anything's possible. I mean, all that's just in theory if you're just using a logical mindset. But, it'll be interesting to see how players prepared by themselves, you know, throughout this time. I would say that'll lead teams to advantages that the groups that were actually training very hard on their own.
Yeah. So how do you feel about the format itself is also different than just going back into regular season games and everything like that. The tournament format is different. How do you feel like that changes the dynamic for teams in terms of playing in this tournament format? And also is it something you're familiar with from playing in Israel? I mean, obviously it's a thing you've seen in different leagues. So.
Yeah. I mean, in most leagues around the world, you have multiple weeks a year where you're playing every 3 days. And, you know, there was times I was in Israel where we play 2-3 weeks of 3 games a week, you know, so it was a lot of rotations. But, you know, I looked at, I think we're 5 days between games. So, you know, in theory, you should be able to almost fully recover in 5 days. And, you know, you would imagine because the first 3 games are part of the regular season that these are the games that are going to hold the most meaning. You know, I would say now the clubs are going to go full go on these first 3 games and, you know, whatever happens after, of course, everyone wants to win. But, you know, the main thing is, you know, to get through these three games for your regular season.
Right. And how do you feel about that, the group that Minnesota United is in with Colorado and Real Salt Lake and Sporting Kansas City?
Yeah, we feel like it's a strong group. You know, we don't feel like we have any obviously freebies, but that's also to MLS. If, you know, in general, it's a pretty fair league on any day or any given night. Any team can beat anyone. It's not, you know, one of these top-sided European leagues where, you know, the first place team is ahead of the second place team by, you know, 70 points at the end of the year or whatever, you know.
Right. So, I mean, it's a pretty Liverpool shade right there.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so it's, you know, just American sports in general, it's almost at any given night because of how the leagues are structured with the drafting or salary caps. It's always pretty level across the board.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what the, you know, obviously there's not really a home and away thing going on. You'll be playing sort of in neutral sites, but with no fans, then especially if, you know, it's not clear exactly what happens after this, but if there is some kind of resumption, you know, in MLS, there's such there's often a very big difference in terms of your home record versus your away record for teams. It's going to be interesting to see teams sort of playing consistently on a level field.
Yeah. We're all in this, you know, it's all new. You know, it'll be exciting for everyone. It's not, there's no givens, you know, there's no freebies anywhere. So, I mean, I think it'll be a really level playing field throughout the tournament.
Aaron, I've got to ask you, I've been dying to ask you about this for a long time. Yeah. Israel, not the obvious destination when I think of a singular American soccer player moving on. first of all, how did that move come about and why did you feel it was the right destination for you?
Yeah, so it all kind of started coming about maybe 3 months before we lost MLS Cup in Columbus. I was going to be out of contract. Columbus had made an offer, but, you know, in that moment, you know, I was playing behind Kai Kamara, who had just, I think, Golden Boot the year, 28 goals, and you know, he was an amazing player. And I just wanted more of an opportunity to where I could go play freely and, you know, to not have to sub in for 2 minutes or something where you really can't show yourself. So, you know, I'm Jewish and I've qualified for the right of return in Israel. So I knew I could take a passport and I don't know, just getting calls from agents. And, you know, I was on a guy's trip down in Key West with some friends and I got a call and I was like, all right, if you book the flight, I'll fly out. And just kind of happened like that, kind of spur of the moment. And, you know, it turned out to 4 years later.
Yeah, you scored a lot of goals as well in the first year or two as well.
And yeah,
it led you to Maccabi Tel Aviv, which is the club in Israel. You won the league as well during your time there. How was your time there, both professionally and personally as well, living in Israel?
Yeah, I guess I can start professionally. It was good. I mean, obviously the big move to Maccabi was, you know, something that, you know, to this day I feel like fortunate to play for, you know, such a prestigious club. And you know, to play all these Europa League games and, you know, be in the Champions League and all of this was, you know, stuff I'd always dreamed about, you know. You know, just essentially as an American, you almost have no chance to play, you know, just based off the passport laws and everything. It's, you know, so hard to even get into these competitions or to find clubs that you'll be eligible for it. So in that aspect, I would say that was, you know, the highlight of my time there. Just playing in these competitions was so, you know, just something I'd always dreamed of. And personally, it was great. You know, I went over there as, you know, a single guy at 25 and had no ties. So, you know, it was a bit freeing. I felt that I was kind of on a journey by myself and not to get too personal, but, you know, I feel like I was able to, I don't want to say find myself, but, you know, I was on my own. I had no one around me. I didn't know anyone. I had no family when I went. And it just felt nice to know that I could kind of make it somewhere on my own.
So when you were over there, did you like in terms of taking advantage of that? Did you get to go to see, you know, sites and sort of like experience the culture and everything like that?
Yeah, I mean, by the end of the 4 years, you know, I can speak a pretty good amount of the language. I can I have tons of friends there. Yeah, we would go. I've been to Jerusalem a lot. Once all the sites there, Dead Sea a lot, which is one of the vacation spots, and it's beautiful. You're sitting on the border of Egypt. I mean, you can see you're in Jordan, you can see Saudi Arabia. I mean, it's just like stuff that you would never get to do in America. Cross the border into Egypt a couple times, and you know, it was just really cool stuff.
Yeah. And then as far as that professional development also in terms of, you know, getting those opportunities with a team like that, do you feel like that also, I mean, how that experience has affected you as a player in terms of just your bringing that veteran level and sort of an experience in a lot of different kinds of competitions to a team?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I had some great coaches. I was lucky to play under Jordy Cruyff, you know, very powerful figure in world soccer. Steve McLaren was an assistant coach who was the coach of England in the World Cup. It was, you know, it was awesome, you know, and you're at a club like this and you're able to develop and do well. And I don't know, I just feel like you're able to come back with a lot more confidence. You know, if you're a young American, essentially in MLS, very hard to get minutes, especially if a 9 or a 10 position as a striker and whatever the attacking mid, you know, based off the DPs and everything. So I know it was nice to go get confidence, to realize that you fit in this league, that you're a good player. You know, sometimes it's hard when you're young, you're playing 1-2 minutes a game, or maybe don't make a squad, or then you start doubting yourself, am I really good enough? So it was nice to know that, you know, you can make it somewhere else.
Some fabulous experience was gained whilst you were playing over there, Aaron. You mentioned playing in Europe, and in particular the Europa League. Here's some countries, based on my research, that you got the chance to play in because of the Europa League. Iceland, Hungary, Armenia, Spain, Austria, Greece, Norway, Serbia. And you scored your first European goal in Albania, I believe.
Yeah.
Did you think you would have that kind of experience from a footballing perspective?
No, it's crazy. You know, you're talking about your experiences to friends. And I was in a conversation the other day here with a couple guys, and they're asking about some of these places. And I, you know, couldn't believe I'd been in Albania, or, you know, I'd been in Kazakhstan or in Armenia, just countries that you would never, as an American, would think would be in. So, you know, I'm so thankful for that experience. You know, I got to see the world while playing soccer. I mean, I can't ask for much more than that. And it's just, you know, it's surreal. Even, you know, you naming off these countries, to know that, you know, I went there, and, you know, it was an unbelievable experience.
So as far as then making that decision to come back to MLS and join Minnesota United, like, what, you know, you talked about the moment being right to go over to Israel, sort of find your confidence, find yourself and everything like that, and develop. Like, what was it about the opportunity to come to Minnesota that really struck you as like, this is the time to do this?
Yeah. So, you know, I had a little bit of history with Adrian in the past. I'd known him, and, you know, when this came about, I wanted to play for him as, you know, the manager, but also personally, you know, my girlfriend is, you know, playing in North Carolina. And so I thought it would be a good moment that, you know, to get closer with her. And I don't know, I think it was just a kind of perfect timing to get back. I was finishing my deal in Israel in the summer, and I knew eventually I was going to come back to MLS. And so when this opportunity came up, I just didn't want to give it up.
Yeah. So, what has that experience been like, you know, with your girlfriend currently playing also, like, how has that been going through the quarantine experience and everything?
Yeah. I mean, obviously we had a long break. We were able to spend some time together during the quarantine, train together, which was, you know, so nice. You know, obviously we'd been doing distance this whole time, and to actually spend 2 months together was, you know, more than I could ask for, you know, really brought us closer. But, you know, we're going through this together. She's in Utah right now, in their bubble playing. So it's nice that we can lean on each other and, you know, share our experiences and just try to keep each other positive day by day.
Yeah. I should say, so can we say who your girlfriend is?
Oh, yeah,
I don't mind. So it's Abby Dahlkemper, right? So.
Yeah.
Just so we're not having a whole discussion about like this without anybody knowing who, who we're talking about. So a little window into like what's their bubble been like out there in Utah? Like,
they're in a couple of different hotels. It's not like one bubble like we have. For instance, they're in an Embassy Suites, and I wouldn't say their situation is as good as ours is down here, you know, based off the league, but they're managing, playing games, and, you know, at the end of the day, that's all they want to do. They're okay. They're okay.
Yeah. And so when you guys are training, do you get competitive with each other?
We play pickleball, so when we're playing pickleball, we get a little competitive.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this has been our only real competitive moment against each other. But, you know, we're playing, we run fitness, and we'll hit balls with each other, and, you know, it's nice to share this passion with, you know, someone you love.
Yeah, I get into trouble with ping pong. That's my problem. Yeah, it's like I really want to dominate a ping pong. So
it's tough. You know, at the end of the day, both you know her and I are you know extreme competitors. Neither wants to lose. So you know, a little bit of competitive rage can come out here and there.
I get in trouble with beer pong. So, so there you go. Aaron, going back to when you first came back to Minnesota United, I was watching some tape of you when I first found out we were going to be interviewing you. I think it's safe to say a lot of people view you and the way you play as a fairly direct footballer. You're a target man. But yeah. I was quite surprised at seeing some of the goals you'd scored in Israel because you'd scored a lot of different types of goals as well.
Yeah.
Do you think you changed as a player from when you left Columbus to when you returned to Minnesota?
I don't think I changed. I mean, I think I had this the whole time, but you know, when you're young and coaches are kind of forcing their ideas into you and you're trying to do anything 4 minutes, you kind of become the player they want you to be, you know? And I think over there, I was able to be given a blank slate and, you know, you're able to show all your qualities, but I feel like when, you know, you're getting subbed in for a couple minutes at the end of the game and someone's telling you go hold the ball up and, you know, go flick every ball and you're not going to, you know, try too much stuff or not going to try to chip a goalie from 20 yards or, you know, so, you know, when you're younger, you're just doing anything to please the coach to try to stay, you know, in the picture. But I feel like as you're older and you become more established, you're able to play with more freedom and try stuff that maybe you wouldn't have tried before you had the confidence.
Did you feel as though, Aaron, that Adrian Heath has given you that element of freedom?
Yeah, you know, I feel like Adrian respects me, what I do on the field. I feel like we've got a good relationship. And, you know, if I want to try something, I don't think it's going to bother him because he knows, you know, I have the idea and he trusts me to, you know, go score goals.
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like it's a thing that it applies, you know, it's a thing you hear it come up a lot in, or I've heard it come up a lot in sports with players, but it applies across, I think, a lot of professions. We tend to look at sports and go like, well, it's just this is how this guy plays. How good is he? Is he better than this guy? But, you know, like I think in your life, a lot of that sort of growing up is that progress you make of understanding the difference between just like doing what somebody wants to do and then doing what you're capable of and trying to find a mix there so that you have an identity and that you want people to appreciate that identity and play you because of what you can do and not just, you know, what they see in you
necessarily. Yeah, exactly. I agree. And I feel like that also relates to other aspects of life. You know, if you're told as a kid, you can't do something, you're going to believe it forever. You can't do something, you know? And so I feel like this translates to sports and real life. And, you know, I feel like a lot of just young athletes are just trying to please their manager or coach.
So looking ahead, you know, as we get into this, is obviously you're at the start of something. You're going to be down there for quite a while. We talked about the video games. I also wanted to follow up and ask about, like, do you have backup things to do in case it gets really boring?
Yeah, I brought a couple books down here. Picked up, look, it's the Ed Snowden autobiography.
Okay.
I forget the name of it. I was going to find it. But, yeah, interesting about him. But, yeah, started reading that on the plane, pretty good. I brought a couple more magazines, but, you know, long time, a lot of things to do.
Catching up on, you know, I guess it, hopefully you have some access to some HBO or something like that. You can catch up on some things. So,
yeah, we, the TVs are pretty good. We have HBO, Showtime, Premier League soccer games on right now, past the afternoon with, so.
Yeah.
It could be worse.
It'd be great if you hadn't just spent 3 months at home watching TV already, I guess.
I know, man. I know. You know, it's anything that comes on right now, like any sporting event, I don't care. I'll watch ping pong. I'd watch hot dog eating contest. Shout out to Joey Chestnut probably on the 4th of July, but I'd watch anything right now.
Tradition. You know. Tradition.
Yeah.
Just finally for me, Aaron, what is a good tournament for Aaron Schoenfeld and for Minnesota United?
A good tournament. Obviously, we want to get out of the group. We want to go far in the tournament. I mean, I'll say we'd like to win the tournament, you know, as to any team. But personally, I would like to score a couple goals, help the team. I mean, I think more important is to help the team get through whatever we need to get through. But, you know, as an attacking player, you want to score. That's what you're here to do. So, and I would like to get a couple goals.
Well, there's definitely going to be opportunities. I think it seems like even with 5 days rest and recovery, there's going to be a good amount of, you know, people are having opportunities. Some of those, you know, we brought in a lot of new guys and it'll be great to see, you know, all of you guys get run out there. And it's that opportunity that every player wants, which is to go out there and prove themselves.
For sure. For sure. It'll be interesting.
Well, Aaron, thanks so much for taking the time to join us here on Sound of the Loons.
Yeah. Appreciate you guys having me on. I hope you have a great day.
Yeah, and thanks to you, the listener, for joining us for the 103rd Sound of the Loons podcast. Be sure to leave us a nice review on iTunes, or at the very least, a 5-star rating, and follow the team on Twitter at MNUFC and Cal at CalWilliams.com, and me at Steve Entress. You can also follow Aaron on Twitter at Aaron Schoenfeld. Are you a Twitter guy generally, or you do something?
I'm a news Twitter guy. I'm not tweeting too much. I just like to take my news.
Yeah. I think just stay away from it generally. I went through a period of not being on it at all, so
yeah.
I should get back to it.
Exactly.
Apologies, as always, to Richard Wagner. And remember, there's only one person in this whole world like you, and people can like you exactly as you are.